Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello everybody.
Watcher.
We're back.
We're back with more talking.
More games.
Games and stuff.
Stuff. Yeah. More stuff.
Cool.
It's always stuff.
It is. Do you want to go first or shall I?
You can go first.
All right. I'm going to talk about Rift. It's the big static group roundup this week because we've got lots going on at the moment all of a sudden. We've got two new static groups to talk about and we're still going with Rift as well. It's great. It's that new group smell. That I rocked up like Tuesday and then Saturday and I had no idea what game we were even playing for some of that. So that was great. And just the enthusiasm, everyone rolling new characters, forging off into a universe full of possibility that's not been made all jaded and boring by, you know, bitter veteranhood.
I know what one of the games is, so...
A refreshing revisit to some old classics.
I saw everyone log into it on Steam and I thought, what the hell are they doing that for?
Fair enough. I'm going to talk about Rift anyway. That's the one we've been going with all along anyway on the Fridays. We're raiders now. That's what we do. We raid. I hesitate to use the phrase end game raiders because we were doing some raids on some stuff that's not been end game for about 2 or 3 years now. But it's a start, you know. It's encouraging. So basically, we're talking 10-man instances, and you go in there, and everything's got special borders around their portrait and super spiky portrait thingies and stuff.
Double the hit points.
Really much more difficult, yeah. Well, they come in groups of 3 or 4 of these as well. They're all sort of 10. So this was the Gilded Prophecy instance, not to be confused with Intrepid Gilded Prophecy, which is very much the current endgame meta where all the super professional people go and do LFG raids and stuff for and grind out the special magic tokens. That Intrepid Gilded Prophecy, IGP, you might see in level 65 chat, that's something that goes on that we're not ready for at all yet. But
you're not ready for any of it.
Well, essentially, it's a redesigned and beefed up version of Gilded Prophecy, I think, which is the one we did, which is an original, more or less launch content level 50 raid, back when 50 was the level cap. Still in there, done by almost no one. I imagine all sorts of strange lights lit up on Tryon servers. Oh my god, people are doing this thing again.
Somebody's lost.
Yeah, somebody's in there. They've gone through the wrong whirly, clearly. No, we did it on purpose. We shortmanned it as well, which, you know, shortman renaissance. That's the thing at the moment. Inspired by Teppo there, who doesn't believe you need all the people to do to do dungeons and stuff. So we basically 8-man raided a 10-man raid. It was set to level 50. We set ourselves to level 52 or so. All the monsters in there are level 52, but they're also raid monsters, which makes them even more difficult to deal with than standard dungeon monsters, which are normally elites. So it's all calibrated for a 10-man squad. We did all right. We had 2 tanks, 2 healers, and everyone, all the rest of the rabble were DPSing and maybe supporting and stuff. I don't know. It was all far too intense.
You weren't paying attention, were you?
Far too intense for me to work out what was going on at the back row. I was just hanging on for dear life in the middle of this vortex of massive AoE constantly and gibbering a lot on Mumble. So good times. So the yard trash in there's, you know, relatively hard going, but, you know, manageable. There's no major surprises in there, although a lot of the basic mobs in there have knockbacks or weird summon, you know, yank people into the middle type abilities and things, makes life more difficult and interesting. 4 bosses, and we're talking super duper dance mechanics for these. The first one was this giant scorpion thing. It had a lot of, every so often it would break off and go and chase a named player down and inject them with a whole load of poison, and that put a lot of pressure on the healers and so on. It also had, I think it had cone attacks front and back, so it's, you know, very much a case of trying to work out where the best place to stand, which is to one side, which is a lot more difficult than it sounds if the tank is going and flipping it around it's facing quite randomly.
You need a better tank.
Yes, that was me. I was trying not to get caught in the whirly in the front arc, and then I thought, no, hang on, my job's probably just to stand in the front
your
arc.
Your job is
it.
To be in the front
yes,
arc.
Yes, so there was a bit
take
of...
the damage until your skin burns off.
That's what I signed up for. Sword and board. Yeah, that's the way. So then there was another boss. It was a kind of... I forget what the middle boss was. He wasn't too much fuss. There was one where there's a giant golem thing.
Okay.
That keeps summoning crystals all over the ground, and I think for all the crystals that are still there, you have to pick them up during the fight, otherwise he gains superpowers or something like that. I was at the front tanking the giant monster with face full of giant monster and just whirlpools and fire and rains of arrows coming down all around me. It's quite a kinetic and visceral place to be tanking in a raid fight, I've learnt. Then the last boss, which was some sort of shaman type thing, who kept calling out the instructions instructions of what we were supposed to do, and it took us quite a long time to realise that's what was actually going on.
Very helpful.
Yes, yes, big writing across the middle of the screen. Jump, turn around, don't look at the crystal, that kind of thing.
And occasionally he would say, Simon Says, do it.
No, it wasn't even that elaborate, and we still managed. It still took us a couple of goes. One or two of these bosses did wipe the team. I'm not invoking guild permadeath on these raids, because it's just totally out there, totally bonkers. And largely outside most of our experience. None of us are experienced endgame raiders. You know, none of us have a proper guild on the go that we actually go and do stuff with, mostly. This is just us fumbling our way through and discovering all from first principles. We'll usually get one wipe per boss before we go looking up things on a wiki, you know, just for the novelty and variety of it all. But yeah, we did get through it, though. We didn't wipe so hard and so often that we came to a grinding halt, which is just as well, really. I mean, yes, there's eight of us, but we were level 52ing a level 50 dungeon sort of thing there, raid. So, good. A whole load of new special achievements. A whole load of fantastically powerful level 50 gear, which none of our level 60 to 65 players had any need or use for at all, which all binds on equip as well. So, yeah, apart from that. But we're not there for the gear. We're there for the experience. And it's interesting, because I suppose it depends who you ask, obviously. But a lot of people consider raiding to be, you know, the top. The purpose of end game MMO play, and obviously if you're not into that kind of stuff anyway, then you don't care. But it's just nice to see it, nice to have a go. You know, I don't really want to be signing up for pick up raids, because that goes badly quite quickly, and I've not geared up for it all. And there's a big progression of stuff. You have to do these raids to get access to that particular equipment, which you need in order to meet the gear requirements for the next one and stuff. And this isn't even anywhere in on that. I mean, we were just doing some mothballed level 50 content that no one really looks at anymore. Yeah, level 65 is where all the proper raiding goes on, because why would you raid if the gear rewards are no good?
Exactly. Why would you do it?
We do it for fun, apparently.
Raids for fun.
We do. It was hilarious. It was a great time. I really enjoyed it. We did another one as well.
If you're going to start playing games for fun, then I can't help you.
I know, we're subversive like that. Fight the system.
Games are serious business.
Serious business, yeah. But to prove it wasn't a fluke, we did another one. Green Scales Blight. This one we actually got to fight and kill one of the big dragons. Rift, the whole lore and story of Rift is that there are like six giant dragons, one for each element, that come along and just start trashing up the world and everything. And pretty much every ascended, defiant or guardian, his purpose is there to fight the machinations of these dragons. And we finally actually got to kill one of them in the end. So that was nice. Again, it's another level 50 raid, calibrated for 10 players at level 50. The monsters in there were 52. We went to 52 as well. I think we 7-manned that one because we were missing someone, so it might have been 54. I can't remember what we picked in the end. It was all still giving us XP, though. There wasn't grey mobs. That's the thing. I think it's probably fine. I can count that ticked off, and yes, we did that properly if the monsters are giving XP. If we're doing level 50 raids are all level 65, then that's probably a bit pointless, aside from just the tourism of it all. But no, we're fighting. Again, level 50 gear, not much use for anyone. the loot that drops. But the last fight was insane. There's a number of bosses, a big hedge maze, and a whole load of these elfoir. There's like eco-terrorist elves that have been aggravating us all the way up from level one.
I hate hedge mages. Hedge mazes. I'll mention one in the game I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, this is worse than that. This one, it wasn't a particularly complicated hedge maze, but I got lost a couple of times. Each time you kill a boss who's typically in one part of the maze, it teleports you to the start and then resets the maze and changes it.
Okay, random? Or
I don't know. You can probably learn the way through. I don't think it's random. It's all scripted events triggering each time, but it was all right. We managed to kill the three various super elves and stuff, and then onto the dragon in the chamber at the back, and that was insane, because part of the dance is that he keeps summoning in these noxious plants with tendrils that actually act as roots and snares if you go near them. But trouble is, he keeps doing this over and over and over, and at one point, I think you might be able to see on the video, there was something like three or four hundred of these plants in this giant room with the dragon flying around bombing us underneath, and I thought, well, our graphics cards are all going to start melting at one point, because there's just so much going on in this room. Then we realised that there was an actual mechanic we should have learnt about, which is that if you go and stand in the death pool with the death tentacles in, you get a damage over time fire effect on you, and then you can run through the plants and it will insta-kill the plants while it's on you. So we sent Teppo off to
do
that.
Why would you do that? Why would you do that to poor plants?
Because they're evil plants. Evil plants from like the dark place or something. I don't know. No one tells me why we're in there. I'm just in there tanking and hanging on for dear life.
Monster.
that last fight we wiped once, but I'd have a second go at that. But we got that once we worked out what we were doing with killing the plants as we were fighting it. got a lot better, largely because we were starting to get double-digit FPS again, which was very helpful. Yeah. And yeah, managed to kill Greenscale. Woo! I mean, there's probably some shenanigans later in the story of this MMO that means he comes back or is resurrected or is superpowered dead mode or whatever. I don't know.
Can anything die in a repeatable dungeon?
Well, I mean, in a technical sense, we could just queue for it again and there he'll be. But in terms of the lore, you know, the sort of ongoing story of it all, he doesn't appear in further expansion content, except in sort of dream fragments and all this, that and the other. There's reasons, whatever. But no, it's just nice to get in that game that we've been playing for years at a time and actually understand some of what the backstory is and why, when we go to this expansion island, is such and such not there anymore. And it turns out most of those epic events take place in the raids. Yeah. It's the raids that dictate the overall meta story of Rift. So it's nice to take a part in some of those.
So there's actually a real reason to do them.
Well, yeah, you get some of the background as to why things are the way they are, and when you move from the 0-50 game up to the 65 content, you know, various dragons are there or they're not there or they're missing or they're gone, and it's, you know, there's just no real explanation at all as to why that's the case, because I suppose it's because that would then spoil the content of these raids. But if you're a new player soloing your way up, there's a lot in there that's not going to make much in the way of continuity sense. So yeah, we're quite enjoying the raids. I mean, we're sort of adapting. I think a lot of it's made possible by the fact that we get control of what level we're going to be, the whole level ascended, you know, set ascended level mentor, that sort of thing. That gives us control as to, you know, and lets us use the content in a way that makes sense to us. You know, we've got 7 or 8 people, we haven't got 10, so we can, you know, give everyone 1 or 2 more levels, and that then sort of counterbalances it all. And as it's turning out, it's still the right kind of challenge for us. We're not expert raiders. We're not dedicated and practiced and ultra geared and stuff. But we can still have a go at this stuff. And no, I'm not saying that should be made the case for the very cutting edge end game raiding from Nightmare Tide or whatever. I mean, we're not there, and we're not, you know, complaining that we can't have a go at it. There are some content that should, I guess, yes, be reserved for expert players who are well organized. But, you know, to maintain that needlessly with redundant content, stuff like the level 50 and 60 raids, which were the end game in their day, have now been supplanted. I don't know, why would you need to necessarily keep that a special preserve? Because the people who are capable of doing that aren't interested in that anymore anyway. They're off doing the actual end game. So yeah, all good fun. I'm enjoying it a lot, and it has opened it up and made a bit more of an interest, because some of the expert dungeons, classic expert dungeons, were certainly getting a bit easy for us, but we're trying the Storm Legion normal dungeons, and I think we'll be going at classic versions of those, expert versions of those at some point as well. There's lots to do still in that game. We're getting to that point where grinding our way up the levels is paid off, you know? We can just sit back and not have to worry about progression particularly now. We can just turn up and do stuff, you know, without... We're getting to the point where pretty much everyone is almost 65. It will be another week or two, maybe three, before everyone has reached level cap, at which point it's not, you know, there's no sense that so-and-so is holding us back because they haven't done the extracurricular grinding that's been required. And I hate it when that is the case. Now we're getting to the point where no one needs to do that anymore. We can just pick stuff off a menu and go and do it, you know. I mean, there'll be a certain amount of gear progression, but that's less important. That's a bit more nebulous, and that's something we can sort of chip away at if we retain our interest in it. But just being able to sort of turn up, I mean, we've done 2 out of the, I think it's about 7 or 8 level 50 raids in the game, and then there's about another 9 or so at level 60 and 5 more at 65. So, you know, and that's in addition to the 5-man dungeons as well. So there's lots of new experiences. That's what keeps us going, keeps us interested, is trying things we haven't tried before. It's when we get to the point where we've done everything lots, that's when people will get bored. That's when it'll all start to walk away, I think.
Yeah.
But we'll see. No, I'm still enjoying it a lot at the moment. And yeah, Endgame Raider, finally. Yay. I don't remember I've ever done any Endgame Raiding. I mean, I'm not sure if you call Star Trek Online Elite Strike Forces Endgame. I suppose so, but...
Also, it's not Endgame Raiding if it's not Endgame.
Well, yeah. So yeah, I've never done it in the traditional sense, which is, you know, the two or four groups all working together in the end game of a very long progression dungeon type setup. I don't know. It's just nice to be there. It's probably not all I hoped, but it's still fun. I don't think it could
if
ever.
You're having fun, you're doing it wrong.
I don't think it could ever have lived up to my expectations. You know, all this sort of almost mythical folklore and legendary status of people who can get their stuff together and do these, you know, the most difficult content in these games. It's never really been me because I've lacked the dedication and perseverance. But now I'm getting a taste of it and a bit of an insight into what it's like, at least. But whether we're going to end up doing the actual end game stuff, that's another matter. Who knows? One day, maybe. But maybe not. And it doesn't matter if we don't, which is good.
I think you probably will, you know. It's not going to be that long until you hit that level.
Well, I think it will get a question of learning the dance and the coordination stuff. I think we'll hit a point in these raids where, actually, no, it is us. It's not levels. It's not equipment. It's just basic competence. We'll reach one of these where it's just far too an elaborate dance that we're just not able to pull off consistently enough to do
faith.
It.
Just have faith. You'll be able to do it. It can't be that hard.
I hope I'm wrong, yeah, but we'll see. Anyway, you can talk about a thing.
Okay, I'm going to talk about... You know how you were going on about Assassin's Creed the other day?
Yeah, so I've totally bounced off that. Yeah. I just can't bring myself to start it up anymore. And that's the Black Flag. That's the good one.
Yeah, well, that reminded me that I spent real money on Assassin's Creed Unity and I should really play it.
Oh,
so
right.
I went back to Assassin's Creed Unity, which is the boring French one.
I've heard nothing but indifferent things about that.
France looks good. Paris is lovely.
Yeah, has it got a nice Eiffel Tower?
Yes, it does have an Eiffel Tower.
Ah, trick question. It's set before the Eiffel Tower was
built. It has an Eiffel Tower.
Well, of course it does. They would have bent over backwards, story writing wise, to create some kind of weird, nonsensical flash forward sequence just so they could put an Eiffel Tower in, because you don't know you're in Paris unless the Eiffel Tower is there. In fact, you don't know you're in France unless the Eiffel Tower's on the skyline.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, filmmaker's code.
I know. You can see it from everywhere in France. It's so tall. Yeah.
Anyway.
That sort of sums up the commitment to France they have.
France, Eiffel Tower, tick.
Yeah, so I decided, right, I'm going to get in, I'm going to ignore all of the bollocks around the edge, I'm just going to knuckle down, get through the plot, out the other side, and see if it's actually resolved anything on the Grand Assassin's Templar plot thing. It's not going to, I know this, because it's an Assassin's Creed
game. So you basically reached that, I'm fed up with this, let's just get on with the story now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was trying that with Black Flag, and I just still, because the story missions are just really irritating.
So there was a bit of a hedge maze.
Yep,
I was fighting through that. I couldn't be asked to figure out the way through, so I just killed everyone and used where people were.
You are a parkour guy.
Yeah.
Can you not climb a hedge and run along the
top? No, apparently not.
If there's one thing about Assassin's Creed that's been consistent throughout the entire series, is that if your objective is on the other side of the city, you can draw a straight line and just go up and over every wall until you get there. Then you're thwarted by a hedge maze.
Yeah.
You can just, like, punch through a hedge. Or, like, you know, set fire to everything.
A bizarre hedge maze, which actually has bits where you can slide under it, because there's no... trunks, and it just sort of suspended.
The whole thing's hovering.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't think
is that one of the bugs I saw so many.
No, I don't think they've ever seen one before. They don't know what a hedge is.
Mm.
Yeah, so the rest of the time is basically running from one side of Paris to the other, backwards and forwards, going to kill stuff. And then I got to a bit where I was chasing a boat and had to stay close to the boat, and I couldn't stay close to the boat, and I rage quit it twice.
Good call. Excellent. Well done. Yeah, I did something similar. I was running through Kingston, had to follow a guy whilst listening to a conversation and not be seen, and I just murdered everyone and then gave up.
Yeah. Well, this is a boat going down the Seine,
yeah.
And you got to run along with the bank following it.
No one has time for Assassin's Creed stealth nonsense
anymore.
It's
not stealth, it's run flat out and do it. So you're basically dependent on, A, getting the route right, so you don't go down the bit at the end where you are at the bottom of the bridge when you end up at the top of the bridge.
Right.
Yeah. And also assuming that the controls will let you get the right route, and not to jump you down off the thing so you end up at the bottom of the
bridge.
That
wonderful habit the series has of, when you push forward and run, jumping onto the nearest fence post and just lurking there.
It's a mission which seems perfectly designed by enemies of the game to say, this is what's wrong with the controls in this game.
So you've played Syndicate, have you? The most recent London one?
No, that's the other thing. I'm thinking at some point I'm probably going to crack and have to play Syndicate.
Okay.
Because it's London. And I need to get through Unity first, otherwise that would be wrong.
Well, I have a theory. I'm wondering if they've got two different teams and it's the old Star Trek films syndrome.
I think that...
Every other Assassin's Creed game is okay.
They did say that they had two separate development processes.
So the team responsible for Assassin's Creed 3 and Assassin's Creed Unity should all be fired, is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
And then they should just do an Assassin's Creed game every, like, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years maybe? Something like that, anyway. We could do with a break. That's what I'm saying.
It could really do a break.
To go away like Doctor Who did and then come back and be awesome in about 15 years' time.
It feels tired. It just feels so tired and exactly the same as last time, and it will be the same next time.
Well, it's looking increasingly cynical from the outside. outside looking in. They're getting closer and closer releases. I mean, how long was it between Unity?
A year.
I don't know.
It's an annual franchise.
Can it go any quicker than that? There's all sorts of weird spin-off stuff happening half-yearly as well. Vita games and website nonsense and all the rest of it.
Yeah, interesting games, they like to call them.
I'm sure if they could make one in 3 months, they'd do it four times a year, probably. Yeah. It's that real... There's a real sense that they're just whipping this franchise for as much money as will fall out of it, you know?
Well, it's the cash cow.
Exactly, but it doesn't need to be quite so transparently obvious. I don't know. Well, whatever. So we think... So Syndicate... By that logic, should be reasonably good. I don't know.
I've not seen anyone raving about it, but then again, it's Assassin's Creed, so no one's going to rave about it.
No, yeah, they'll just sort of march into shop, buy it, and then get, well, you know, click on Uplay and buy it, whatever. And just
get on with it, come out the other side thinking,
say nothing.
Well, that's
go,
that done.
Yeah, go, and then just move on with their lives, you know. Fair enough. And it's a shame, because I used to be a huge fanboy of the Assassin's Creed phase. Around the sort of the installments of Assassin's Creed 2, I think, was at its peak.
Yeah, I think, and it's been downhill ever since, apart from a little... spike with a boat.
That was a different game, really. Yeah. The naval combat was not really what Assassin's Creed is, but people liked it anyway, so that sort of brought it a bit of a reprieve for 4, I suppose. But
yeah, I don't see what they can do next year to make it
any
different.
Well, more to the point, I don't care what they're going to do next year, you know?
Yeah. Well, the sales this year were down, and they blamed it on Unity being buggy. And I don't think that is true.
No, that's not true at all, because in my experience, the game-buying public doesn't give a squat about QA.
Yeah.
So it's probably other reasons.
Yeah, it's that people are getting bored of it. And yeah, and I reckon next year's sales will be down as well. So.
Maybe they'll have to try a new franchise or something.
Yeah, so that's Assassin's Creed boring.
Oh, right, okay. I want me to talk about something else instead then.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to talk about Star Trek Online, which we've just started yesterday, in fact, a brand new static group. We're trying Romulans again. So this will be the third go at a static group through Star Trek Online that we had. We had the original Federation all signing up as ensigns, whatever, and that was back in the day. I think you were part of that.
I was indeed.
Yeah, that first go, because you've been a lifetime fellow there. This whole go is off the back of a couple of the chums on Mumble there, are all lifetime subscribers as well, and you know, they're mentioning that perhaps it might be an idea to try and get some money's worth out of that. So, and I've often liked the game as well. I mean, the game hasn't often liked me, and it's done bad things to me and broken me and stuff, largely because of the Christmas ice skating race to get
which
a free
is going
spaceship,
on at the moment.
Which is going on at the moment, and I've got a confession to make.
Are you doing it?
I might actually be doing it.
Have you relapsed?
I've relapsed. Yes, I've fallen off the wagon quite hard, and I'm about sort of 8 days into the 40-day run for
tokens. Am I going to have to chain you to the radiator and leave you until you get better?
I don't know. I might have to book in at some sort of special video gaming priory or something. Well, the reason I've got reasons, you know,
in the best
tradition of an addict, I can rationalise it quite reasonably. Well, basically, it's they have tier 6 spaceships now, and I don't have one, and I don't want to spend £20 on a spaceship. So I thought, well, I'll sacrifice
6,000 pounds of your own time.
I'll sacrifice my dignity instead.
You know, and sanity. Let's not forget the sanity thing. You're never the same for about 6 months
I go a bit peculiar. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've even done a chart and put it up on my little wall there with all the boxes and crosses in, so that I can count my way through. And I think I'm finishing on the 29th of December, so I'm not going to get it by Christmas. So probably going to be a bit odd around Christmas too.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a Breen carrier destroyer thing. It's a super duper massively overpowered spaceship that's in the tier 6. It looks awful. It looks like they've taken the Czech girl from the first year and just like bolted a whole load of stuff on the back.
Well, you see, that's the thing
this is really utterly non-canon spaceship.
That's the thing about Star Trek Online. Whenever they get to design their own ships, they're rubbish.
They're really awful. Yeah, yeah. It's like they've literally just taken the Breen ship and then bolted a bit more prongs on it and added a bit more Breen looking structure to the back. I don't care, it'll be a useful tier 6 thing.
It's gonna be disappointing. Obvious. You're just gonna stick with it out of obligation because you put so much effort into it.
Well, no, I'll use it until I can get onto the summer grind for the Ryzen version. There'll be a Ryzen Riser planet. They do the Ryzen summer spaceship grind nut job. Mental relapse is all luxury ocean-going liners that have been converted for space use. I like those much better, to be honest. But I need a tier 6 ship to be competitive in the end game when we get there. That's the thing. So
there you go.
I need a very, very flimsy pretext to engage in my addiction. That's what I'm doing. Anyway, so that's all going on. I'm not giving a toss about the rest of the stuff going on in Q's Winter Wonderland at the moment. There's like snowball fights and there's something with gingerbread men attacking snow cones. There is a skating thing that you do daily to get the tickets for this.
Is the skating thing still the worst thing ever to appear in a game?
Yes. Yes, it still is. But it turns out I damaged myself so badly last time. This was about 3 years ago, I think, that I got the original Breen Czech Girl spaceship by doing this. I can still do it from muscle memory. It's freaky. I'm going to try it with my eyes closed one time, see if I can get around the course like that. And I reckon I probably still will be able to, because that's now burnt irrevocable paths into my brain, you know, into my how I deal with the world part of my brain.
Are you considering this to be a good or a bad thing?
I don't know. Listen to this, and it could be a review or a warning, whatever. Take it in the spirit.
Don't do it.
But I am, because I'm broken, and it's great. And I need a tier 6 spaceship. Well, the thing is, they don't give out free tier 6. I don't think they give out tier 5. For free, that they expect you to shell out Zen points and dilithium and all the rest of it. I mean, this is the game in which I also spent an entire year grinding out dilithium so that I could convert it to Zen points to buy one of those endgame spaceships, just as a sort of feasibility study, and that worked as well and also damaged me quite badly. So, you know, I think I'm the real winner here.
No, you're the loser.
I'm the loser. Anyway, entirely aside from all that, we've started a little static group of Romulans on the I think we're going Romulan Federation side again, just so we can get access to the enormous grind for the Fleet Starbase. Oh God, they're everywhere. Now I come to explain it to someone else. Anyway, yes. So we did the first the Romulan campaign to begin with is pretty good. The first sort of 20, 30 levels or so. It's some really quite recent put together and well put together missions where you're, you know, dealing with the aftermath of Romulus being blown up, and then there's this new alien race who come in and start attacking your colonies and abducting people and so on, and you're trying to get some revenge from all of that. And then the formation of the new Romulan Republic, which essentially is the entity in Star Trek Online that sort of forms after the end of, I don't know, canon stuff, things blowing up, alternate universe reboot, all the rest of it. So yeah, different, interesting, green everywhere instead of blue or red, you know, HUD and UI and stuff. Interesting spaceships, you get all the little green warbirds and things. I don't know what they're called now. There's a Dederadex battleship.
Yeah.
Yes, there we go. And a Mogai cruiser, I think. And some Delan warbirds, which we just got out of the that one there. I'm just pointing at one of the many models available in the studio here. You start in one of those even had the bird
the
thing
one
underneath.
The one from the original TV.
Yes, because there's reasons. There's like this old mothballed spaceship that's just happens to be knocking around, which is their excuse to do some fan service and trot out the 1960s Romulan spaceship with the eagle on the bottom. I got a shot of that as soon as possible, and the rest of the Romulan ships you get are pretty good redesigned, teched up, modern looking versions of all the sort of warbirds with the battle cloaks and stuff. It's all good fun. So yeah, we're sort of five of us tooling around the galaxy following the missions. It's interesting how it deals with teams, because I typically solo the game a lot in the past. And so with the ground stuff, because normally the ground stuff, if you're soloing, it's you beam down and there's four AI bridge officers who just run around shooting stuff and things on your behalf, which gives it almost like a Guild Wars style of gameplay. And it's much more about you trying to make sure they're in the right place and have the right equipment. And you don't do so much yourself, but when you're doing it in a full team, that's all humans. You don't have any bridge officers, so that's going to be an interesting see if my four friends are as competent and up to spec as AI henchmen. We'll see as the weeks go on. So far, so good though. We're getting the hang of the flanking and stuff. That seems to be the way forwards. And we're just, because it starts you off quite gently with the abilities and the kit skills and stuff like that. So I think, you know, about halfway through the session, I finally got given a photon grenade. Which I could throw at stuff, so that was quite good. I'm the only tactical officer. There's like three engineers, a science guy, and a tactical who's me. So I'm gonna get myself a sword or one of them Vulcan lampshade stands as quickly as possible, and then I'm gonna just charge in, melee everything.
Ceremonial. They weren't actually meant to be used. Yeah. Anyway.
I know what you mean. I don't like them. I like the Sulu's rapier type sword thing that turns up.
Why would
anyone
have a sword?
Like the one that sort of unfolds in the film, with like ding 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 ding. Because I don't know swords.
Why would anyone have developed a
high-tech swords? Yeah, that's the way. But also there's kit skills for tactical that involve a lot of leaping sideways with your feet first at the enemy and lots of Kirk fighting.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so I'm going to develop a very Kirk-style approach to my tactical duties, and then the rest of them can just sit on the nearby ridge deploying turrets, which is largely what the engineer does.
Sounds ghastly.
Yeah. In space it's different, because in space that's usually scaled or written and sort of designed around you being on your own in your spaceship. You don't really have bridge officers in their own spaceships following you in a little pack. So what it does there is it scales the content. So ordinarily it's a solo instance. It dumps enough ships in there for you to have a bit of a fight against one, you know, just your good self. I think what it seems to do at the moment is just dump five times as many ships in there if you're in a team of five.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, and that got quite freaky, to be honest, especially since a lot of them turn up on the spawn point and we're all just finished closing the dialogue and somebody else has clicked next and suddenly, whoa, okay, and we're, you know, the three of us are on fire and one of us has gone cloaky and legging it, and, you know. So that can take you by surprise doing full group space content in that game. But yeah, we're getting the hang of it. It's very early. I mean, we're so early in that the ships don't only have like one back slot, two forward slots, and no abilities, so you just sort of shoot. The ability to actually build will take more time, because we need to go up the ranks a bit to get the bigger spaceships with more slots, and then you can start to specialize and define what your role's going to be. I'm going to go cannon boat, I think, because that's just really spectacular. Lots of pew pew. And we've been using mines as well. I haven't seen anyone using mines almost anywhere in any of the pickup groups I've been doing back in the Strike Force days. But yeah, they're quite tricky to use, but fun and satisfying when they work. You just drop a load of things out behind you and they just sit there, and you just have to rely on the enemy flying into them. But they do sort of home if you get close enough, so there's a bit of leeway. It's good. It's got that optimistic, yeah, here we go, we're off on the big journey sort of feel, which I really enjoy around the start of a static group. I mean, the second time we had a go at static group in there was Federation Romulans again, and we all got to about the 30s, and then I think, I don't know what happened, but we just drifted away from it all. So we'll see if we can really go the distance this time. I mean, the game is a lot easier now. I tell you what, they've seem to have done a lot to fix that whole, you know, the reason the first static group fell apart was because of their insane mentoring system. Yeah. Yes, they did have mentoring, okay, you know, one thumb up, tick in the box, but it broke very, very easily. Basically, in space, if you fly more than 10k away from any other person in your fleet, the level mentoring suddenly collapsed and disappeared, and then it would start spawning. So basically, we had one level 50 in the group, and a whole bunch of level 2s and 3s, and that level 50 got too far away, and then the whole mission started spawning level 50s, which were just one hitting everyone else who were now level 3s and 4s. Yeah, that was quite a disincentive to carry on playing, I think. That was one of the major reasons why we didn't get anywhere with that first static group run through. So that seems to be a bit better this time, and I think it helps that we're all the same level. We've all started new characters at the same time anyway, and we're all just going to play these characters on the Saturday, so that should help mitigate some of the insanity and keep it a bit more reasonable. I like the game, I always have, you know. Yeah, I joke a lot about the stupid Christmas grind, but
I've always liked the space bit.
The space bit's always a lot of fun, and I've come to like the ground thing. I don't know what it is, whether they've refined it over the years, or it's just gotten a bit easier, or I've personally just started to understand it better, but the ground thing's grown on me
and
a lot.
It is the closest thing to real Star Trek there is now.
It is, yeah, yeah. They're doing new content at the moment, some Stormbound thing. There's a whole load of new stuff with Deep Space Nine. This is past the end of this massive Iconian war thing they've been doing. I don't know if they're actual weekly episodes at the moment, but certainly they're cracking out new episode content at the moment.
They stopped the old weekly
stuff. I think it's probably unrealistic to be able to do anything decent and, you know, of high quality in 1 week or whatever. Presumably you prepare them in advance, but even so, it's probably better to release them on a less rigid schedule and make sure they're actually worth playing. But yeah, so there's new stuff going on in there at the moment. And of course, yes, obviously Q's Winter Wonderland. But lots of people, pretty much everyone I talk to doesn't like Christmas events. Do comment, dear listener, if you like seasonal events. But most of the feedback I seem to pick up talking to people about this stuff is that it's at best annoying and at worst unwanted.
And at really worst, damaging.
Well, damaging, yes. I don't care. I'm going to have a tier 6 spaceship. And you won't.
A rubbish one. I could get
a made-up one. Yeah.
No, you know, you realise if I log in,
yeah,
I can just buy one with the 3 points I get for having the lifetime.
You got about millions. And do you have to regularly log in to be given those?
No.
Or does it just happen automatically?
I never have used to. I haven't logged in for ages.
You might check, but yeah.
I did actually pay.
Well, well done you. But yeah, but I didn't pay about £200 for Star Trek Online, so, you know.
Yeah,
who's
but
laughing
I have a December.
Yeah, we're both broken in different ways.
Yeah, we are.
Interesting. Anyway, why don't you talk about something entirely more healthy?
I'm going to talk. This is going to be a hard game to talk about. Yeah. And I actually have to have the title in front of me.
Wow.
Dr. Langezkov, the Tiger, and the Terribly Cursed Emerald, a whirlwind heist.
Right. Snappy. Snappy game there. Snappy
this
title.
Is a game by William Pugh, who did the Stanley Parable.
Okay.
It's a free game.
Yep.
I'm going to be challenged here to finish talking about it before the video I recorded of the entire game runs out, so I don't know what to do. It is about 12 minutes long if you don't bother reading all the text.
What?
It's free.
Free, okay. Well, even so. I don't know if it's right, if it's entirely proper to be cross about a free game being 12 minutes long.
No, it's really good, though. It's narrated by Simon Ansell.
Yeah.
Him off of Nevermind the Buzzcocks.
Okay.
Was it Nevermind the Buzzcocks?
Sounds yeah, like a televisual entertainment that I'm not aware of.
And basically, you turn up wanting to play this game.
Yeah.
But somebody's already playing it. So you have to wait, and you have to wait your turn, because only one person can play the game at a time. And then you end up going behind the scenes and doing a bunch of stuff to help the guy who's playing the game get to the end of it.
Oh, this is another one. This sounds like some horrifically meta piece of performance art.
Oh, it's incredibly meta, but it is really fun and quite amusing.
All right.
It all goes horribly, horribly wrong. The voiceover feels very much like Thomas Was Alone.
Mm, okay, yeah.
You could imagine it was Danny Wallace doing it instead.
That sort of thing, yeah.
And it's really good. And it's free, so that's good. You can't complain about the length because it's free.
Well, this is it. I feel cheated, frankly. I have no ability to slag this game off or slate it or anything because it's free. And that just like removes all arguments.
Well, I think
I'm just going to sit here.
I think there's an important point that it makes, which is, you know, with films, right? You've seen a film.
I've seen a film.
Yeah. You've seen one of those short films.
Possibly, yeah.
So, you know, a nice 10-minute bit or a 5-10 minutes of just something happens and bump, you're done.
Okay, yeah.
Games doesn't really have the equivalent of that, and this is that.
But it's the idea of film to pass the time, because that's essentially what games are for. Or are we is this a games art thing again?
Well, no, I think that the entire question there is flawed, because that way you're trying to impose a rigid way of people enjoying something.
Well, I look for purpose in art, and there often isn't any, and then I get cross because I'm a scientist. Well,
why do you watch a film? That's one of those questions.
Because I want to be told a story visually, usually.
Yeah, okay.
But that can apply to 10-minute stuff, I suppose. But I'd come out at the end going, a lot.
Well, no, it's a nice idea.
Expectations on length
idea.
And pacing. It's not specifically it has to be 120 minutes long, but it has to be substantial enough to fill a large part of my experience.
You don't watch short films, do you?
Not really, no.
So you don't have that satisfaction when after watching a 10-minute film thinking, that did exactly what it needed to and didn't have any of that padding which would make it a blockbuster 120-minute nothing.
I don't know. This is the short stories versus Hugo doorstoppers thing
is.
Again, isn't
it? It is. It's exactly that argument.
You don't like the 40,000-word-plus Hugo
novel
winners.
I think that most Hugo books have more words in than they need. There's an awful lot of padding.
Yeah, but if the world was down to you, I read
Seven Eves. That is all the padding you could want. There's whole sections in that book which can just
but the
go
padding
away.
Builds the world. The padding builds the ambience, the setting.
No,
if it was up to you, the entire Hugo back catalogue would be in one anthology by Philip K. Dick. You know, you'd have reduced everything down to like, you know, sort of 20 pages of, wow, oh, okay. That was quite a clever science idea. What's next?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
I don't know. I can't explain it to you. We've had this argument on and off for a very long time. And it's very much down to personal preference and appreciation. Some people look for different things in books and, as it turns out, computer games.
I just think that certain sci-fi authors could do with something called an editor.
They all have editors.
Not very good ones.
Well, whatever. I'm not going to convince you. That's the thing.
Yeah. And no, you're not.
And you're not going to convince me, which means this game is probably going to be a great appeal to some people and not others. But it's saying very positive there on the reviews.
Yeah, no, everyone loves it. It's great. It's beautifully presented. It does some
kids
really
don't have the attention
things.
Span anymore. That's what it is. Get off my lawn and take your 10-minute game with you. Free.
It's really good. People should play it. Yeah, and there's not a lot more to say about it, really.
Because it's so short.
No, because I can't say anything about it without spoiling it.
Spent longer reviewing it than playing it.
I mean, I could tell you about the tiger, but the tiger would ruin it. And then that's the whole grapnel hook thing.
Well, that's another thing. I mean, does that make it very difficult to review this kind of thing if it's so intensely story-driven and spoiler-based that saying anything at all about it will ruin the experience?
That's a big problem.
That's a particular vulnerability for a lot of these sort of pseudo shocking short indie pieces, which are sort of very narrative and very, you know, this is not going to be what you're expecting, and the whole thing essentially is a twist. Yeah. How do you even talk about it then? And I noticed you've had trouble with this sort of thing on previous shows with this kind of game.
That's because most games don't have that one core strong idea. Mm. They have concepts in gameplay, but not concepts in a higher sense.
But does that just leave us in a place where essentially all we're left with is you going, it's really good, you should play it?
Yeah.
We just have to take your word for it. I respect your opinion. You're very knowledgeable about these things.
It's exactly the same with films.
What can you say about it?
You can take a really well-made film that's a really interesting idea that you can't talk about at all and still just review
the
it.
The entire thing is spoilerific from start
to
finish.
And it happens quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tricky thing.
But yeah, anyway, it's really good. People should play it. It's free.
Cool. Okay. I am going to talk about Third Static Group. Yeah, we've got another one. This is The Old Republic. We're back in there. So there's quite a lot of my friends have been playing that on and off lately. I'd sort of lost interest and hadn't really been considering it at all, but I thought, all right, we can have a go at that. And it turned up as the sort of mystery Tuesday title. So we're playing that on the Tuesdays instead of the Guild Wars slot. It's given Guild Wars a bit of a rest for a while now. But we will be back. I still haven't 100%ed that game.
Yeah.
And I am going to, because I have compulsions. But yes, so it turned out that a lot of people already had the Old Republic installed. It's relatively sane and agreeable in terms of cash shoppery and how much you can get for free and whether it's worth giving them some magic made up coins to support their work and stuff. Effectively ends up being a buy to play thing. So we started a whole fresh group of Republic troopers. It's a stormtrooper brigade, basically, that we're going to be. It's great. Well, the Republic Trooper is a bit of an odd one for me, because my finger quotes main for this game is the Bounty Hunter, which is, you know, a whole different thing, but is essentially the dark side, the Empire side equivalent of the Trooper. So they both have almost exactly the same abilities, but they've got different graphical effects and different icons.
Well, that makes it all the difference then.
Well, it means that I know how to play it already. Well, the Trooper's more about lobbing grenades and firing rocket salvos and stuff, whereas the Bounty Hunter's more about wrist rockets and jetpacks and stuff, but it all plays the same in the end. But that's good in a way, because it means I don't need to learn a whole other class or a different way of playing the whole thing. I had a quick go at an Imperial agent that I had knocking about on another slot, and I just had no idea what I was doing there. It's an entirely cover-based profession, and that's the reason you see so many suspiciously chest-high looking rocks and boxes and things everywhere you go in that game, because that's all required for the agent to have somewhere to hide.
Yep.
You can deploy an energy field in front of you in the open, and it doesn't work as well, and you don't get quite as much cover. But unless you're in cover, you get absolutely hosed all the time.
Yeah, I was
really
playing
quickly.
A bit of an agent. And
yeah, you've probably seen it within the first 10 levels or so. If you're not behind a rock, you're screwed, you know. And that's such a weird sort of mindset change to how the other classes work. So there is a certain benefit in understanding a class that I've picked as first, you know, as a first time playthrough. So yeah, we've been rocking around on Ord Mantell, which is the
I hate Ord Mantell.
Yeah, it's the smuggler and trooper starter planet. They both start there and they have sort of different stories that run side by side along that planet until you go off to Coruscant and then the fleet. But we basically romped through that entire thing because we're in the age of the 12 times story XP boost bonus for everyone, regardless of if you've pre-ordered or paid special for it. And that just transforms the game. We got I think we got to 15, something like that. We basically blitzed through Ord Mantell in one sitting. And that was great, because it really doesn't outstay its welcome. And if I want to go off and do side quests, they're still there. They still pay one times XP. You can take your time on those. That's fine. They've really changed. I mean, I've talked about this a lot before on previous shows, the idea that they've put this geographical level mentoring system in. Basically, you will be de-leveled down to the zone you're in.
Yeah.
And everyone is. Which is one way, and it does deal with the mentoring problem, you know. You can play with your friends if you're all in that zone. All of you are guaranteed to be of the same top level. So that all works fine. And I'm just enjoying, I mean, we've managed to sort of specialise, because you get to choose different paths within within each class, and we somehow managed to come up with a tank, a healer and a DPS, even though we're all Republic troopers, so yeah, there's enough variation within the trees.
I'm sure that's not an accident.
Well, no, we had a bit of a talk about it, and I naturally fell into a tank role. That's what I seem to like and do best, so that's fine. So we're going to be quite viable for, the three of us, so we're going to try a lot of short manning, I think, unless we get some more boots on the ground. But Yeah, I think it would be good for various dungeons and flashpoints and stuff. And I think you can even just bring in a companion if you're missing a slot. So, you know, one of the new omnidisciplinary companions, you can just turn them into whatever role you're missing. You could have them tank. I don't know if a companion tanking for three players in a dungeon's going to, how that's going to work, because
badly.
The tank typically has to go first and lead and actively take up, soak up the aggro. It might work, but we won't need that. We can just slap a DPS in there and we'll be fine. So yeah, just it's such an agreeable experience now that they've gotten rid of the obvious, you know, now you must go away and kill 200 womp rats before we're going to tell you a little bit more story, you know. Now that that's all sort of massively streamlined, it really does play like a KOTOR game, you know, KOTOR 2, you know, this is KOTOR 3, but it has, you know, very well supported co-op mode.
That's all you've got, really.
Yeah, so I can see us, yeah, romping through there, certainly finishing the trooper story. I can't see it being such an arduous task that we're not going to make it. And then once we've got some max level characters, well, you know, roll another one, different story, work through, or just hit the dungeon circuit, anything like that, really. Lots of possibilities. I mean, it's something I'm finding in general is that the older an MMO is, you know, to a point, obviously the very old MMOs eventually die, but the older they are, the more sub features get added, more expansion, you know, side things to do. You know, I think they just recently added housing, galactic strongholds, whatever. They've changed up all the tactical flashpoints so that they're less role specific now, so we can go and do that. There's, you know, a whole bunch of datacrons you can go and find, jumpy puzzles and stuff. There's a load of crafting. I mean, most MMOs of that kind of vintage start to gain so many side activities, and if they're designed well, they come in sort of small 20 to 40 minute manageable blocks. You can just put together as much activity as you want, and you're always being something different.
Yeah.
It all comes back to those old Raf Costa blog posts where he talks a lot about the importance of downtime. I think he was talking in reference to Star Wars Galaxies. Why bother making a musician and a dancer profession? Well, you know, and then tying that to combat stats, you had to go and watch a musician or dancer to get rid of a load of particular, I think, mind wounds, something like that. Yeah. And the idea was that in a typical play cycle, if you want players to play long periods in your game, you need to switch up what they're doing on a fairly short basis, you know. So you need downtime. You can't be just, you know, danger all the way, because you just get exhausted. That's one reason I'm not playing Planetside 2 these days. I mean, despite it being something I have personally enjoyed and, you know, for a lot of fun, you can't do that for like 4 hours a night for sort of 4 months at a time.
Well, that's where I think Planetside 2's always had a problem compared to the other shooters. Because any other shooter, you play for a bit, then stop. You have a couple of matches and stop.
A deathmatch basis. Yeah. Whereas Planetside and any other sort of long-term, never-ending territorial overland thing.
Yeah, one thing rolls into another.
Eve must suffer very similarly, I guess, in, you know, the big naught-naught battles or whatever, the ongoing campaigns that effectively never really end. You've always got people around the clock in different time zones covering this, that and the other, assault or defence or whatever. You know, you're playing these things for entertainment and presumably some degree of mental relaxation. So you need lots of different things to go and do. And the enduring MMOs I'm seeing are the ones that have lots of different things you can chain together to make a satisfying play session. And yeah, some people might not be into crafting, some people might not want to muck about with house decorating or whatever, some people just want to do questing and nothing else, but you know, they're the ones I think that are going to get exhausted a bit quicker than others. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with just playing in a particular MMO for half an hour, then logging off and going doing something else instead, and some would argue that's quite healthy. I wouldn't know. But really enjoying just the idea of working through, you know, a long laid out task like the Old Republic story chain, but in a more manageable fashion. You know, I mean, those are the bad old days where they had none of this XP bonus stuff and the purple quest markers on the map. You'd get so fed up with the planets. Taris got stuck there for ages, and then off to Nar Shaddaa. Oh god, boring corridor city. So, tile set again. But no, you just run in there, do one objective, run back out, done, move on. And that's good, really. You can always go back and look at this stuff later. But, you know, being at top level in a well-designed game with a mentoring system essentially doesn't mean that you just have the top-level content to do. It means you have all the content to do.
Yeah,
and it's up to
you.
Yeah, whereas being bottom-level in an MMO, you only have the bottom-level content to do. So, logically, you want to get to the highest level as quickly as possible because it opens up the most possibilities and things to do, places to go. So we'll see when we get there. But yeah, I've got a good feeling about these new static groups we've been starting up. I think we'll go for it. Winter helps.
Winter does help.
Winter is a good time for MMOs, I found. We tend to get more activity and interest in our little groups during winter.
It's dark and cold and no one wants to go out.
Exactly, exactly. It's as simple as that, yeah. But that's fine too. It's all good. So, yes, so The Old Republic, Star Trek Online, and Rift. So, quite a sci-fi slant lately.
Yeah, it is rather.
Quite a bit more of that. I might have to drop back into the Old Republic's arena shooter space thing, the Galactic Starfighter stuff. I sort of bounced off it before because it was a bit... It reminded me of War Thunder a bit. It was a bit sort of Twitch and you're dead type thing. But maybe it's a bit more playable now. Maybe they've done stuff to that as well. I don't know. I'll have to see. I did like the little rail shooter thing they've still got in there, though. You can do three of those a week, and spaceship flies through a load of asteroids. You have to shoot stuff down as they come through. Good stuff, good times. It's like the old arcade classic, the old Star Wars arcade thing.
Yes, yeah.
Sort of the spiritual roots in there.
Oh, yeah. Maybe not as good.
Well, maybe. Anyway, over to you.
I'm going to talk about a game which we've both played.
Have we?
Yeah.
Okay.
On the phone.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. I totally forgot about that.
Sorcery.
Yeah, you take this one. I'll chip in.
Sorcery. Sorcery, based on the books called, what are they called again?
Sorcery.
Oh, yeah.
Steve Jackson's Sorcery, specifically.
Yes.
An offshoot of the original Fighting Fantasy game book series by Steve Jackson and Ian Livingstone in the, mid-80s.
Yeah.
I remember buying Warlock of Firetop Mountain in a school book club in junior school. That was one of the first books that I bought and read, and I think one of the first books that got me into the pleasure of reading for its own sake. And yeah, okay, it was a sort of computer game whose advent came before computers were able to do computer games, but it was very, very compelling sort of thing. Anyway, so there's a massive series of those, but then Steve Jackson decided to do like an epic, slightly bigger, grown-up version of those, where he had this campaign. It was four books long. They were big old books, quite a lot of entries, not just the usual 400 in a book. It was they go on and on. It was fantastic. They basic dice combat for defeating enemies, and a spell book, and you had to go and rescue the Crown of Kings, which had been stolen by some evil, I can't forget, it was a warlord of some sort, Witch King, which threatened to throw the peaceful land of Andland into chaos and carnage because of lack of strong leadership, because apparently you can only really rule a kingdom with magical help. It's not enough just to be, you know, good at politics and stuff. And yeah, you had to work your way through four different books of a variety of different settings and challenges, picking, choose this number to go left, choose that number to go right. Very simple concept. And yeah, I've got them all still.
Yeah.
I was meant to, you know, car boot sale them or just chuck them on eBay or give them to a nephew or something, but they're still in my bookcases. I like them.
Yeah, well...
But anyway, yes.
So it's basically just a straight conversion of these old Choose Your Own Adventure books from the 80s, and it is a damn good conversion.
It's a very, very well thought out and clever format,
yeah.
The actual app itself. That's what's impressed me, because yeah, anyone can just, you know, do an app that is nothing more than a series of text files that you check your hyperlink between, which is basically what the books themselves are. But what do you do to make an app out of these things, you know, a proper game, as it were?
Yeah, so it's got the images from the book scanned in.
Yes.
It's got all the text.
Very distinctive art.
It's got a basically an undo, which is the same as having your fingers in the pages, and you can step back to where you want.
Yeah, it records the entire history.
Yeah, which is fantastic.
I don't know if that's cheating or not. Does it tell you off if you use that or record how many times you've gone back?
I don't know if it records how many times you've gone back.
I think because I've done it once so far. I'm playing through the first one. A mine full of goblins, and there was an ogre there working on a rock crushing machine, and I accidentally picked a thing that made me go and attack him, and then I wound back, and then I thought, no, hang on, I should probably just stick with what I did. So having wound back, I then picked exactly the same options again and carried on through and fought him.
You're
anyway.
Weird.
I know. I have this weird code of honour thing.
It's an interesting concept what they've done, but I feel that maybe they've taken, for sure, the best example of books to take.
Yeah.
They're the best of those.
The sorcery books in particular have a good lot of meat to them.
They are the best books in those games.
Hmm.
And they've taken those and done them. So
yeah,
I do wonder.
Where do you go from there?
Yeah, what do you do next? Do you write something new, an original one?
It's a useful engine that could quite easily be adapted to deal with all of the fighting fantasy. I reckon perhaps you go forward and do like anthology editions, like pay £3 for the first 10 fighting fantasy books.
They're not very good.
To be honest,
they're not very good.
They're quite hit and miss. Some of the early ones are very good, but they get a bit by the numbers by the time you get up to, God, 50. You know, number 50 in that series was Return to Firetop Mountain.
Yeah.
It was a big sort of anniversary tongue-in-cheek retro thing. But yeah, there was 49 that weren't as good as that up to that point. And yeah, you could quite easily lose track of it all. I think they sort of tried to come up with a campaign world to tie them all together, but some of the books are just utterly standalone. I think number 4 was a Star Trek type thing. Starship Traveller,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah.
I fear my trivia knowledge. And that one was a sci-fi adventure.
Wasn't there a present-day spy-y one as well?
Yes, I think there was a comic books type one. Appointment with Fear, maybe? Yeah. I can't remember the number. I'm not quite that much of a nerd, but... yeah, so let's talk about the combat then, because that is the combat in this series is significantly different to how it works in the books, and it would have to be, really. I think so. Combat in the original is that everything has a skill stat and a stamina stat. The stamina stat is effectively hit points. The skill is how good you are at fighting. To fight an opponent, you'd roll 2 dice for you, add your skill, roll 2 dice for them, add their skill. Whoever had the higher number takes 2 hit points off of the enemy.
Yeah,
and you just keep going until you're dead.
Very simplistic, but it has to be.
It had to be, because essentially this is a book. It has no memory. It has no way of save games or keeping track of anything like that. From a computer game, you'd expect something a bit more elaborate. And what they've done there is a sort of two-way paper, scissors, stone type arrangement. What you've got is that you can, when it's your turn in combat, you can decide how much you want to attack, and by dragging your little bloke forward or backwards. And if you're full left, that's in full defensive mode, which means you're going to lose, but you'll only take 1 point of damage. Or you can push yourself forward, increasing amounts to do more and more powerful attacks based on the amount of action you have in your bar. And that action bar in total can be bigger or smaller than your opponent's one. But also within it, you will spend that many points to do the attack that round. So at the end of that round, you've done an attack of, say, strength 5. If the enemy does strength 4 when they decide to do their attack, you win and you do them some damage. Or if they do strength 8, then you lose and you take some damage. And the amount by which you're over what they picked defines how much damage you do.
Yeah.
So you can, and it's a weird thing, but the problem I have with that, so then at the end of that round, you've spent that many action points temporarily, and your available action for the next round is much lower. So it stops you just doing massive full attack every turn. But then I for some mechanism I can't quite understand, it regenerates a certain amount of action points per turn. So you might have to spend a couple of turns doing low-powered attacks or defending before you're able to do a really big attack again. But the thing that really pisses me off with it is that the only way you can have any kind of guess at to what the enemy's doing, because you don't know what they're going to do, but sometimes you get given some clues in the text just during the fight. A little bit of text comes up, the enemy is readying his guard, and that might mean he's going full defensive, or it might mean he's doing a low-powered attack.
It feels very much to me like betting in poker.
Yes, exactly that. It's almost like it's a variation on Pontoon, on sort of 21. Yeah. You've got a certain amount of cards face up and a certain amount of hidden cards, and it's trying to work out what the hell's going on with these other cards, and there's very little clues. So it adds quite a large element, to my mind, of luck to the fight. Which I'm not a fan of, really. I don't really like luck in my. I don't know. I suppose is it better or worse than just having an absolutely random dice roll, just dictate it all?
Yeah. Well, I think that there's a strategy to doing the fights.
I think
if you start off going in defensive, maybe figure out what they're likely to do and then counter that. I've also found
sometimes the text does give you enough clues to correctly judge what they're going to do, but sometimes it's quite... I suppose if you play enough of it and long enough, you'll start to be able to parse the text that's coming in terms of what it actually means. And so you'll be able to pick up an ability by just knowing what phrases it uses as to exactly what's going to happen next.
Yeah, I've also found that it may be completely imagining it, but sometimes a less strong attack will actually be better than a full-on one, because I was doing some which was full-on attack constantly until I ran out, and then I dialed it back a bit, and then suddenly I got way more damage there.
Oh, perhaps it works on a system of if you massively overspend, then you do less damage as well.
Yeah, it could well be.
So you have to hit just above for most damage. It could be, yeah. I still haven't quite figured out what it's doing.
No.
It's an interesting system, yeah.
It's interesting. I think that it's ideally suited to the phone.
Yes.
You can drop in and out of this for 30 seconds or an hour.
That's how I've been doing it, yeah. I've been sort of doing a bit while I'm on the exercise bike or sat in the car at lunchtimes, that sort of thing. So it fits the slot quite well.
It, it, it,
I think most of the criticism I've seen on the, because I got mine from the Android Play Store, yeah, or Google Play Store there, and there's a lot of comments in there. Mostly, there's two sorts of comments. There's loads of people five-starring and going, yeah, I had those books as well. They were brilliant. You know, obviously 30-somethings, yeah, having a massive nostalgia flashback. And you should be a bit wary of that, I think, in reviews, because a lot of the time what that is people giving five stars for the original experience they had, like, yes, 20 years ago, and not really telling you much about the game at all. But then there's a lot of people in there who are giving it a very low number of stars because, oh, it was over in an hour. And you think, well, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, the length of the original thing was that the books just took a long time to read and work through. So, you know, if you're younger and not that great at reading at that age or whatever.
Well, also, it was a book, but only a smaller percentage of the pages were ones you were going to hit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There'd be a lot of entries you'd never see.
Yeah. So.
But then also, it was very harsh back in the day as well. You'd often hit, you know, game over conditions or pages that just finish with your life and your mission end here, and you have to go back and start again. So the idea that you would just read it through in one, you know, complete it the first sitting, I don't know. I mean, so far I'm all right. I've not quite got to the end of book one yet, but I'm hanging in there. The stamina's pretty harsh, though.
I know.
You get like 12 hit points, and often things will hit you for three or four at a, yep, time, and then you'll go a whole day of narrative with only one opportunity to eat a sandwich and gain a hit point or something. You've really, really got to ration out the hit points and the gold as you go through, and that's quite an alien experience, considering in most computer games you're dealing with hit points in the thousands and often instant regeneration after each fight. So it's very much a sort of, you know, savvy resource management thing.
I can't help but feel that it'd be one of those interesting ideas. If you wanted to make a game,
yeah,
and wanted to tell a story, this would be the ideal framework to do it in.
It's like Dungeons and Dragons, isn't it? It's a concept that originated well before the technology was there to do it properly, you know, i.e. computer games, computer RPGs. There's still an appeal for D&D, and people do it as a retro thing. I'm running a Pathfinder group myself, but you know, it was obvious back then with all these charts and tables and so on in the back of the Red Book and so on, is that this is, you know, if only there was some way to automatically do all this without me having to do maths while I'm playing a game. And that's, you know, very much what this is, I think, is how do we take the Fighting Fantasy game book specifically, that form, and bring that forward into, yeah, a computer age. And it seems to have found a really good,
yeah,
medium to do that with.
Yeah, I think there is a market out there, I think, for somebody making an engine for making these very easily.
Well, let's put it this way. I spent £9 in the Play Store, and I rarely ever buy anything from there at all.
You got all three of that,
yeah,
you?
I got all three, yeah, of course. Yeah,
fourth will be out soon.
Yeah, that's worth noting, by the way. Yeah, the Crown of Kings, the fourth instalment, isn't done yet, so you'll have to just wait for that. But there's certainly enough to be getting on with the first three books. So it'll be the Shamu Tanti Hills, the Care City Port of Traps, and the Seven Serpents.
Yeah,
yeah.
Your youth was not wasted.
I have really fond memories of all that stuff. I've seen a few Lone Wolf adaptations out there as well. I don't know if anyone knows what the Lone Wolf Fighting Fantasy game, yeah, it's not actually Fighting Fantasy, there's a different competing chain by Joe Dever that I was also buying and reading a lot of at the time, and that was much more of a long-running campaign. There was like 12 books in the first series, and then it went on to another, up to 20 or so, and it was all the same character. You'd carry items and things forward through to the next games, and that was really compelling, the idea of a massive, lengthy epic. I've seen a few Lone Wolf things appear, because I think the actual text of the Lone Wolf books has become open source through something called Project Aeon. I think the chap who wrote it was given his blessing, and it's all there online. You can find that. But I've seen a few, you know, half-assed attempts to turn that into a phone app, and they've generally been greeted with withering scorn.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's very much in the information. If what are you bringing to this yourself, other than just putting text files that are hyperlinked together into a phone app? You know, what new aspect or element is the game itself bringing? And that's the important thing, I think. Still, yeah, well worth a look. Obviously, it's not something you're going to sit down at your, you know, of an evening and spend 4 hours playing through. But yeah, as a small moment activity. Yeah.
The reason why I showed it to you in the pub last week,
yes,
was that we had had that conversation about you not liking any phone games.
The whole format, yeah.
So I went out of my way to find one that you would like.
Yeah, a phone game that is not hateful. That's fantastic.
See, there are good ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised. And I paid money for it. So, yeah, you know, there you go. It does work.
So, yeah, I'm out of games.
Me too. So do your spiel.
You can come along and see us at howtomurdertime.com, where we've got every podcast from the first one back in, was it 2007?
About 1948, yeah, I think.
Long time. You can also go along to, and you can also find the audio versions of all the shows there. You can go along to YouTube, where you'll find all the video versions of the shows, and also our other series, where we are testing each other to destruction at the moment in Fallout.
Portal 2.
What did I say? Fallout there. Portal
2.
Portal 2 co-op playthrough, yeah. Yeah, quite an experience. Which will end.
Yes, we can definitively say there is an end to it.
There is an end to that, yes.
Because it doesn't take that long to play. Still the best co-op, I think, in any game.
I enjoyed that. We'll have to talk more about that as a thing on a show at some point.
Well, I did the calculation, and those videos will finish at the end of January, if I do 2 a week.
You lucky, lucky people.
So, remember, we will stop doing the Portal stuff if you listen to the podcast.
That's not polite to hold the listenership to ransom.
Well, it's the only negotiation power I have.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So, we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.